The Whole Health Cure with Dr. Sharon Berquist, the podcast that brings you inspiration and skills for living a healthy and fulfilled life.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Whole Health Cure, a podcast exploring the science behind health and living to your fullest physical, emotional, and spiritual potential. I'm your host, Dr. Sharon Berquist, and I'm so excited to have as our guest today, Joe Burton. Joe Burton is the founder and CEO of Will, the leading mindfulness training platform helping employees to reduce stress, increase resilience, and improve their sleep and performance. He's the former president of Headspace and spent 15 years as global COO in public companies. Joe is an alumnus of Harvard Business School, author of Creating Mindful Leaders, and regular contributor to Forbes, Business Insider, and HuffPost. Today, we're going to be talking about using mindfulness, emotional intelligence, resilience, disruption, and culture as a competitive advantage. Joe, thank you so much for joining us.
Sharon, it is my absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, Joe, so I just finished reading your book, which I think was just so wonderful about the impact mindfulness can have on an individual's life, for companies, for their bottom line, in just every aspect of how we live our lives. And I found your personal story just so profound of how it changed your life. Can you share some of that with our audience?
Oh, I'd be happy to. So I think I should start by saying I was one of those stressed out type A professionals where, you know, when I was going through some health issues and doctors were recommending to me, have you considered meditation? You know, I would think, are you crazy? That was the last thing I was looking for, you know? So what about my street cred? but here I was, you know, starting in childhood, I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I was the youngest of six. And our father was an unemployable alcoholic. So inside the home, we had, you know, a fair amount of chaos, drug use, alcohol use, you know, violence, the kind of stuff that's no fun to grow up around. And I grew up with this sort of like, you know, the fight or flight trigger kicked in. I wanted to fight. And like, I'm better than this. I want to get out of this, you know, and so on and so forth. And I took that fighting mentality into college, into Price Waterhouse, you know, I had this up or out mentality, which I thrived on. And then, you know, as time went on, I had the good fortune of becoming the global COO of a 50,000 person division of a public company. And so in my early 40s, you know, I'm working 12 to 14 hour days, traveling 70% of the time. I herniated two discs in my back, my mid 30s, again in my early 40s. And so stress and health issues started catching up to me. The chronic back pain turned into insomnia, insomnia turned into asthma, and all of that turned into a really bad attitude. And right around the same time, I lost an older sister to drugs. And 1 year later, I lost my twin sister to suicide, also a long-term addict. And it had this tremendous impact on me. Like, what am I doing with my life? You know, I really need to take care, better care of myself. And so I got into these practices around mindfulness and emotional intelligence and sleep training, really out of desperation. And, you know, it had such a tremendous impact on my life. I ended up getting involved with a number of companies that focus on mental and emotional well-being and founding Will about 4 years ago.
And you know, that's, you know, first of all, I'm so happy that you've been able to find just a healthier life and something that sustains you. And I'm so glad that you've started Will and channeled a lot of that so that other people can share from your life experience and how it's benefited you. And it's interesting listening to you, you know, that whole persona of, you know, that hard-driving executive. I think a lot of people can identify with just pushing because we have such a culture that values us, you know, really just working hard. It's the Protestant work ethic. And yet, you know, you can get to that point where you push so hard that you simply can't sustain that. And finding, you know, meditation, you know, the whole, you know, like you said, when you were first told meditate, you were saying, this isn't you. It wasn't I think the way you wanted to necessarily self-identify. What was that transition like to, you know, that self-image of hard driving to now somebody who not only practices but benefits and then has a company that promotes these same practices?
I think the hard driving, what I learned for me personally is the hard driving doesn't kind of go away, but our relationships to our thoughts and our emotions, you know, if we can master these skills to be more present, alert, aware, open, curious, non-judgmental, then all of the hard driving is viewed through a different lens. And so for me, by that I really mean, you can show up and accomplish in life and be your best self, be a happy, open individual, right? Be kind to others, be kind to yourself, and not constantly worry. And I think for me as a global COO, I got caught up in the constantly worrying about quarterly results, you know, the quarter after that, what's going to happen in the future, are clients happy, you know, all these things in the past that would, you know, pop up constantly. And so in the book, I refer to this as this ongoing negative board of directors in your mind, right? Where you're getting all of this constant feedback and chatter from the inner voices, these inner critics, to the point where you don't really enjoy much. And so the hard driving and the pushing to accomplish and, you know, in my case, getting hooked on money and hooked on stock options and bonuses and that kind of a thing really burns you out over time, and it destroys the joy in your work, right? And most of us spend more time working than we do anything else. So I found these practices really to help me be more joyful and present and aware and just be happier in general. And in being more focused, I actually tend to work a lot less but get a lot more done. In other words, I waste a lot less time with the normal time drains that most of us get caught in. You know, the ongoing RSS feeds and the negativity of politics and the worries about the past and the future. And I tend to focus on what am I doing today, living a life with a lot more intention. So I'm working less and getting a lot more out of it and a lot happier along the way. And so I think that's, for me, that's been sort of the triple benefit of getting into these practices.
And I think that's something that a lot of people would hope to and strive to try and do. You know, it's really possible. And I think just listening to you, you know, you're giving people that leap of faith of, you know, you can let go of that constant work and still get a lot done. It's mindfulness is not the antithesis of working hard or pushing hard. It's really just like you said, a different lens through which you see the work that you do. And what are the specific things that you do that can help you be productive and work less?
So I think the thing that drew me into these kind of practices is the science behind how the brain works. And by that, I don't just mean neuroplasticity, but I also mean all of our cognitive biases, right? And how we spend our time is so much influenced by natural deficiencies of the brain. And so we're distracted regularly by so many things, so many cognitive biases that we carry around. And getting in touch with those, you know, this idea that we're drawn to negativity and we think about things over and over and over again. I think it was Stanford University estimates, you know, the average person has 60 to 70,000 thoughts a day, and 90% of them are negative and not going to happen and never did happen, right? So we recycle things constantly. And that's just one example of a cognitive biases where, like, our brains process information. We get really, really good at processing things over and over again, which is great if you're mastering, you know, the violin or the piano or mathematics, but it's terrible when you're mastering stress, anxiety, depression, insomnia, and so forth. So this idea of we get better at the things we practice most is a core to my practice and a lot of the practices that I share in the book and that we share at Will. So, you know, the short answer would be, how do you spend your time? What do you spend your time thinking about? And I caught myself up on this. Oh, I think a lot about this negativity bias. I like to avoid risk. So I end up redoing things instead of, you know, taking a firm decision the first time. I, you know, would get caught up on going through the same things time and again as a matter of habit. You know, we all get caught in our cell phones, right? And looking at the same bad things time and time and time again and the same feeds multiple times a day. I think the average boomer looks at their phone 50 times a day, 52 times a day. The average millennial looks at their phone 154 times a day. Just waking up to these natural deficiencies of the brain and being able to say, oh, how am I spending my time? I want to change that, right? I want to focus on, I've got certain times throughout the day when I use my device, and the rest of the day, I don't use my device. That gives you a couple of hours back right there for most people. We kick off meetings with a 1 minute practice just to center and calm the room. Otherwise people run, you know, with all of that anxiety and, you know, wandering mind, they run right into a meeting and then share the stress from their last meeting. So little practices like this on how are you spending your time? Are you being intentional about it? Can you catch yourself when the mind is wandering is transformative in a day. Otherwise we all get caught up in, you know, what scientists call automaticity, where we just get caught in the same negative routines and do things without thinking about them.
You know, I think we can all identify with that. You know, as you're speaking, I'm thinking, how many times do I check my cell phone in a given day and check messages? And you know, there's a cultural expectation as well in that, you know, I think when you send a text or send an email, there's now this expectation of getting a response in a fairly short time frame. You know, how do you melt, you know, kind of the cultural expectation with knowing that, you know, fragmenting your attention and letting your mind not necessarily be as focused as it can be as you're distracted. Like, how do you find that happy balance between the two?
Well, I think creating space for yourself, and I've got little things that I think about on a regular basis. So in your example, geez, I sent that text or that email, or I left a call and I haven't heard back. It's been an hour. It's been 2 hours. It's been a day. It's been 2 days. And, you know, I've got little things that I just remember. It's like, oh, it doesn't mean anything, right? They're probably busy. Get on with your day. Don't waste time thinking about things that you want to happen. Just take things as they are. Another great practice around sort of equanimity is, you know, recognizing reality. Most of us have the tendency of taking what's going on and then we add a lot of things to it. We add to this story, right? Where, you know, someone may be late to work, an employee may be late to work, or a team member may be late to work. And instead of accepting that, you know, we may say, oh, they must be looking for a job. I bet they're really unhappy. I bet other people are looking for jobs. I noticed someone else took a long break. Other people are coming in late. We build these stories up around the tiniest details instead of just accepting things as they are, right? We do the same in relationships, making them much better than they may actually be instead of taking things in balance, right? Accepting things as they are. So I think that is it's another great practice to just not get caught up with this constant rumination about how we would like things to be, and instead being grounded in accepting things as they are. You know, then we can avoid the highs and lows that really draw us into, you know, the reason people love their phone so much, we get the highs of that constant dopamine fix. Things are going on, people like me, my posts are being liked, people are checking my feeds, right? But then we hit the immediate downer when we don't get that fix. So how do we avoid those highs and lows and just sort of, you know, accept things as they are and be more balanced throughout the course of our day, which is a much healthier way of being instead of being flooded with cortisol.
And so how do you structure your day? So obviously, you know, I'm sure flooded with emails just running your company, requests, texts, et cetera. Do you kind of batch things and allocate certain time so you aren't being distracted in multiple directions? Or how do you structure your day?
Well, I've been practicing single tasking. And so the I think most of my career, like so many people, I was very proud of being an excellent multitasker. And then, you know, lo and behold, science tells us there's no such thing.
Exactly.
So the human brain can focus on one thing at a time, right? I think the American Psychological Association has done research. They estimate we lose 40% of our productivity when we multitask. So it's what I call multi-slacking. We think we have a lot going on, but we're actually doing less.
Yeah, I think it's 120 bits that we can process in our brain at any given moment.
And that's plenty.
It is, it's plenty.
And so if we can do one thing at a time, start it and complete it, move on to the next task, lo and behold, we're actually getting more done. We don't feel like we have so many more balls in the air. And for me, in running a startup, we've now got 250 clients. We cover some 2 million users around the world. This one thing at a time is sort of a mantra for me of, you know, what three or four things are you going to accomplish today? Because it's hard to do more than that. And sticking to it, right? Single tasking throughout the course of the day. And then I also make it a practice of not allowing others to hijack my time. In other words, I block time on my calendar. And when people come over to see me, like, hey, can I grab you for a few minutes? It's actually no. The answer is no. Because I'm working on a particular project right now. But you have access to my calendar and you can book time whenever you need me. And then likewise, I commit to you, I'm not going to come over and hijack your time or your schedule or your project or your attention by constantly disrupting you through the day. And as I'm finding, you know, startups or even, you know, public companies, this is what we do to each other constantly. We take that distracted, wandering mind and we go around and not only disrupt our own attention and increase our own multitasking, we do the exact same. We go around to our colleagues and sort of screw up their days and their focus when we should be practicing one thing at a time.
And what are, you know, little things like that that you've done at will? You know, so obviously you can set the culture in your own organization. And I think you've already mentioned a couple that I think a lot of people could use as strategies within their organization. And I love this, you know, schedule a time on the calendar instead of just walk into someone's office and it kind of interrupt their attention. You also mentioned starting meetings with a 1 minute, you know, meditative practice. What are other things that you do for your team and with your team?
So we really work to make these practices part of the culture. So we do, we kick off, we've got a little sheet in our conference rooms on mindful meetings. And so what does mindful meeting mean? When we come in, it's like, okay, computers closed, devices off. You know, what two or three decisions are we going to take in this meeting? Someone keeps time, holds us to the meeting time so we can get on back to our days. Small example, but really important. Most meetings start late, end late, and don't accomplish what they set out to. At 3 o'clock, you know, this idea of, we talk a lot about giving the brain a break throughout the course of the day. You know, push and recover is something that we preach a lot. Push and recover. As professionals, too many of us push until we break. And so building in breaks throughout the course of the day, encouraging people, you know, take a break every hour. Work 15 minutes, take 5 or 10 minute break. Walk around the block, walk in the neighborhood, go grab a coffee. Grab someone else to talk to. At 3 o'clock, we do a team mindfulness practice. So we take 10 to 15 minutes a day. We cycle through our digital training at will, covering topics that help us, you know, in our work and in our lives. And we build those breaks in. And so to make it part of the culture and recognized, you know, this is how the brain works. You have to build in recovery so that you can refresh and get back to being a point of focus and productivity. Otherwise, doesn't matter how many hours you work. If you're working with a distracted mind, you're exhausted, you're tired, you're unable to focus, it's not good time, you know, for the company, and it's not good a good experience for yourself.
Yeah, and it is such a culture change compared to what goes on in most organizations. You know, I think a lot of people can relate to the, you know, just sit behind a desk or worse yet, have another cup of coffee and keep sitting behind the desk to keep moving. And so I want to talk a little bit about Will. You know, it is, grown dramatically since 2014, since the time you started it. And you just mentioned that you now have 250 companies that you're working with and 2 million unique users. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's just tremendous growth. So congratulations. That's just wonderful. And what do you think sets you apart from other companies that are in this space now of digital health and digital mindfulness?
I think in our case, having a really modern consumer-friendly experience, treating employees as consumers is a big deal. And so as we think about that, a lot of what I experienced in my early days of getting into mindfulness and meditation practice came to the front. And so when I was first starting to learn how to meditate and about mindfulness skills, I probably practiced with 20 or 30 teachers. And I got a whole lot of like the woo-woo, hippy-dippy, search for enlightenment people. And that's just not me. You know, I'm a type A personality, stressed out professional. I'm not looking for enlightenment. I'm looking to lighten up a bit. There's a big difference. And so finding experts, I think one of the things we've done really well is finding experts who have worked in business settings, understand professionals, understand the lingo, and have this balance of well-being and performance. How do you take care of yourself so that you can be at your best no matter what you want to be great at, right? So we've done that really well. Having our platform with now almost 30 trainers, and we're working with MDs, PhDs, certified experts in resilience and mindfulness and emotional intelligence skills and sleep training means a lot, right? So our commitment is for professionals by professionals. So what we do really resonates. And I think the thing we're most known for is it's a tactical training experience. So it's one thing to learn how to meditate and just sort of zone out and recover a bit, and that's fine. But to get the real benefits, you need to understand the right way to breathe, how to be more intentional in your life, how to incorporate forgiveness and gratitude into your day in and day out. And so we've got 1,500 sessions that are tactical in 12 different aspects of mental and emotional and physical well-being. And each one is followed with a little tip. Here's how you apply it today. Or an article of like, you know, 3 to 5 tips on how to get more out of life. And for busy professionals, that makes all the difference, right? Give me the good stuff. Tell me exactly how to apply it immediately because I got stuff to do. And so that's how we've approached it. And you know, we integrate into Virgin Pulse and Limeade and Castlight, Cornerstone On Demand, all these amazing companies in wellness and leadership and development because we've stuck to that idea of we have to be based in science and create something that's for professionals by professionals.
Yeah, and I think that practical, you know, a lot of times, you know, there's theory, there's the science, and then how do you apply it into your life? And I think it, kind of taking all that information and already doing that work of converting it into the applicability is just so helpful. And the types of programs, what are the different, you know, you mentioned that they're tactical. And there, some of the principles behind them are how to breathe, gratitude, intention, just how to be more intentional. What's the spectrum of the programs that you offer?
Well, we cover 12 different aspects of mental and emotional well-being. And so we started with mindfulness training when I first started the company 4 years ago. And through growth and client demand and partner requirements and so forth, we're getting deeper and deeper into what are the stressors of an organization, what impacts a company culture, what's burning professionals out, what do people need in their personal life. And so we've expanded into sleep and relationships and parenting and, you know, all of these areas that are wonderful in life but also can, you know, cause us issues. So across the 12 areas, we cover mindfulness, stress resilience, managing your emotions, unlocking greater performance, relationships, physical health, emotional intelligence, got a bunch of career programs now, targeted training programs for people in sales and marketing and finance, the top 10 most stressful careers to help them get more out of their career and life. Sleep, 1 minute practices. We've got a whole collection now of yoga and stretching and exercise. And it all kind of, it grew organically. Within each of those, you find a total of 250 programs covering pretty much anything you can imagine, right? Ranging from parenting to being a leader to managing chronic back pain to dealing with insomnia to you know, physical health and nutrition, developing a positive outlook, you name it. And it's really through having so many users and so many clients that we get sort of the list of demands, what do people need, and then we map it to recognized science, clinical studies, where specific techniques have been shown to help people, and then we bring those to life with experts. That's been sort of our recipe for success.
And which seems to be a recipe that's working. And from your experience, are there certain areas that are recurrent themes where you see people have the greatest need? Does any area stick out in particular, or is it pretty evenly split across the 12 areas?
There are three we talk a lot about. And when we get into the research behind what troubles people, this is consistent with the research. So when it comes to stress and anxiety, about one quarter of people report having extreme stress, meaning they can't cope with the pace of their life. This is growing year in and year out. The American Psychological Association does some great research in this area. The predictions there are in the next 10 to 15 years, imagine half the people you know aren't going to be able to cope, right? That's where the numbers are going. I joke, half the people I already know can't cope. So we all need the help. The next area is sleep. And so about one third of people suffer from insomnia. And, there's only probably 2 to 3% of a population that would suffer from like a clinically diagnosed sleep disorder. And our friends at Sleepio cover that end of the spectrum. We're really focused on the other 97%, where about a third of the population has ongoing or recurring issues with sleep that haven't dipped into sort of disease state, but are nonetheless having a big impact on their life. And so we have a sleep program we created with Dr. Jeff Dermer, who's a founder of Fusion Health, a leader in treating sleep issues. And then a third area is around pain management. And so, Sharon, I think when we were young, our parents' generation was a generation of ulcers, right? And ulcers have pretty much disappeared. You never hear about ulcers anymore. That was the quintessential indicator of like, oh, you must be stressed. You've got an ulcer. Well, now it's back pain. And so we have several programs on pain management, working with chronic pain, managing back pain, and so forth. Those are three areas in every kind of organization. And we work with, the Silicon Valley tech giants to the largest payer and providers, insurance companies, to hospital networks, to manufacturing companies. Those three, stress, anxiety, sleep, and pain management, show up in every community.
I would say that my medical practice probably mirrors those same three. So it's just really interesting hearing that from you. With stress probably being even more prevalent in a general medicine practice than the 50% that you estimated. So very interesting. People are seeking out help, and you measure outcomes. Your digital platform is powered to be able to capture data and get kind of the ROI for companies that invest in it. And what kind of results have you seen?
Well, we see significant changes, and these are consistent with the research I share in my book as well. Most of our clients are interested in tracking a couple of things. One, engagement. Our employees engaging to learn and take better care of their health, right? Their mental and emotional well-being, their sleep, and so forth. So being able to surface all of that data for any community and say, here's exactly what people are picking, how long they're training, what they're completing, and so forth, really opens up a better understanding of, oh, what's the population going through right now? So that in and of itself is important and valuable. Then we get into the ROI of what's happening with absenteeism or employee turnover or the cost of healthcare. And the leading companies out there are taking this kind of data. And of course, it's in the aggregate, it's blinded to them. Their payer providers can see all of this data on what's happening on an individual basis, right? Of people who are going through these kind of training experiences or getting into a mindfulness or a meditation practice or doing sleep training, what's happening with their health, their biometrics over the course of time. And this is where we see the future of this entire space going, which is, you know, we're doing a big study with the largest healthcare system in the US right now, where their clinicians are recommending our training product to patients. So it's about, they've got 200 clinicians, they're recommending our product. So when people come in and say that they're suffering from stress or anxiety or depression or insomnia, et cetera, they're actually prescribing, you know, quote unquote, prescribing programs on Will to say, oh, here's a program that can help you, where you'll learn, you know, tactics and tips and techniques that you can use throughout the course of your day to manage stress and anxiety, to manage your thoughts and emotions, to quiet that wandering mind when you lay down to sleep at night, and to learn about the normal functionings of the brain, right? So some, you know, this is where we see it all going, where not only can employees, you know, self-serve and help themselves sort of behavioral health before they hit a wall, but after someone hits a wall, you know, being recommended the right programs to help them get back on track more quickly, but also learn the skills so they don't end up in the same place again.
Yeah, no, that is really interesting. Well, Joe, thank you so much for sharing so much about the work that you're doing. And thank you for putting so much content out there that is making a difference in so many people's lives. You know, I think the beauty of a digital platform is, I'm sure a lot of people who feel comfortable in the privacy of their own home may not be as comfortable reaching out to, say, you know, someone like myself in the healthcare system, or getting help in a way that, you know, may not be as comfortable as in their own living room. So thank you for making that possible for so many people. And before we conclude, is there anything you'd like to, you know, share with our audience? Any advice or suggestions or comments?
I'd be happy to. Well, first, let me say, Dr. Berquist, it's been my pleasure. And also, thank you for all you're doing, not only in your practice and your work at Emory, but, you know, through this podcast and your commitment just to help people live healthier and happier lives. You're an inspiration for me, and it was a great pleasure to be here. So thank you. For your audience, what I think I would leave everyone with is, if you're suffering from any of the things that we talked about today, you know, things like stress or insomnia or back pain, or maybe you're suffering from annoying coworkers. Who knows?
So the new syndrome.
Exactly. What I would encourage you to do is just get started. You know, there's so many outlets now to learn about mindfulness and emotional intelligence and meditation techniques. You'll be surprised. You know, invest the time. It's not, there's no pill form to help you with these things, but you'll be surprised how these bite-sized techniques can transform a day and help you catch that wandering mind, and over the course of time be in greater control of your thoughts, your emotions, and ultimately your own happiness. And that's what I learned along the way. And I would just say, get started. If you're suffering from any of those things, get started and check it out.
I think that's great advice. You know, it's the bite size. It really does make a difference. Well, thank you so much. Really, really appreciate your time and the wonderful conversation.
My pleasure, and thanks everyone for listening.
The Whole Health Cure is brought to you by the Lifestyle Medicine and Wellness Center at Emory. For more information about wellness assessments, classes, and other resources, please visit our website. This material is copyrighted by Emory University.